Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Coming up in a few minutes, we'll play clips of a Time magazine interview with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, in which he's pretty candid about how he hopes to hurt the United States with his State Department cable dumps. But first, two quick takes on other countries that are very caught up in WikiLeaks mania this week, Canada and Spain. First, we'll check in with our neighbors to the north. Joining us now is Derek Stoffel, national reporter with the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Derek, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thanks, Brian.
So several long cables out of Canada actually summarize and analyze Canadian television shows in these WikiLeaks documents. Why is TV a hot topic for American diplomats up north?
Oh, apparently there's not much to do in Canada but watch TV. I don't know. The American diplomats, they're not named in this cable that dates back to 2008. But, given our, proximity to the U.S., there's a lot of programming. In fact, it's on our network, the CBC. There's a couple of shows. One's called The Border. Essentially, it deals with a whole bunch of border agents in Canada as they defend the 49th parallel. But it seems it caught the interest of the U.S. diplomats at the embassy up in Ottawa. They basically were saying that according to this unnamed diplomat, that they don't really like what they're seeing on the CBC, saying the CBC programs was pushing, and I'll quote here, insidious negative popular stereotyping with this anti-American melodrama. They just thought that they're sort of pushing all these stereotypes. There's a couple of other programs. One's called Little Mosque on the Prairie. It's a lighthearted look at a bunch of Muslims who live in a small town, and apparently that one caught their interest too. So at the end of the day, Brian, it looks the assessment of Canadians from the U.S. diplomat was that Canadians, that we apparently all carry a chip on our shoulders.
That's what I've always thought about Canadians and people from Minnesota. But not all the cables were about television. Canada's ambassador to Afghanistan, William Crosby, has actually offered to resign over some of his leaked comments. What's that about?
Yeah, that's, a much more serious topic. Of course, Afghanistan is a big issue for Canada, like the United States. We have some 3,000 troops stationed in the south in Kandahar province, and this actually is a fairly recent cable dating back to February of this year. William Crosby was meeting with his counterpart, the U.S. Ambassador Carl Eikenberry, and the discussion turned to the Afghan government and President Hamid Karzai, and they got talking about, the flawed electoral system in Afghanistan. And according to the cable, Crosby got emotional, saying they have to make the electoral system work. And he said, quote, "It makes my blood boil that the international community must stand up to Karzai, or else it'll be blamed for allowing the system of graft and corruption and influence being spread across the country." So some pretty serious criticism. Of course, a lot of diplomats, I think, are thinking the same thing, but to have this aired in public, Crosby actually took a preemptive step, and he offered his resignation to the Canadian government, saying this is going to be embarrassing stuff. But just yesterday, the Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper said, "Well, that's a little bit hasty. There's no need to step down just yet." Of course, a lot of world leaders now even being more vocal in their criticism of the corruption and Hamid Karzai. So that's a cable that really got a lot of attention here in Canada.
Yeah, and in one cable, the former head of Canada's spy agency said Canadians have an Alice in Wonderland attitude toward terrorism. What did he mean by that?
Well, what he meant, and that's Jim Judd, and the agency's called CSIS. It's, our CIA. Very secretive organization. We rarely, and in fact, this is probably the biggest look inside CSIS that we've ever seen. And what Jim Judd was quoted in that cable as saying, you read the quote, "Alice in Wonderland worldview." He was essentially saying that both Canadians and the courts here don't take the threat of terrorism very seriously. And he said that our hands are often tied. His agents' hands are tied when they're trying to deal with these threats trying to protect Canadians. He also spoke about Omar Khadr, and he's a prominent Canadian. He's 24 years old now, being held at Guantanamo Bay just one month ago. I was down in Guantanamo for the trial. He pleaded guilty for killing a U.S. soldier in Afghanistan back in 2002. He's the only Western citizen being held at Guantanamo. And this has stirred a lot of emotions in Canada, this Khadr case. And essentially, there was this video that was making its way through the public, and it shows Khadr, who was only 16 at the time of the interrogation, being questioned by three Canadian officials, and Khadr breaks down in tears. And Judd was worried that that would essentially provoke a wave of anti-American sentiment, and he talked about that and basically said that this would also bring about moral outrage, something that Judd described as a Canadian specialty. So he was very harshly critical of the Canadian public and the courts, and you know, that has called for, you know, people have called for you know, some sort of a remedy there in terms of how can this stuff be said in private. Mm. So that's a cable that also had a lot of people talking too.
I got to go to Spain here in a minute, but Canadians are supposed to be polite. But then you have Tom Flanagan, a former advisor to Prime Minister Harper, saying this about WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
Well, I think Assange should be assassinated, actually. I think Obama should put out a contract and maybe use a drone or something. You know, there's no good coming of this. I agree some of the stuff is quite titillating to read. I was strictly struck by the revelations.
Tom, that's pretty harsh stuff. Just for the record, that's pretty harsh stuff.
Well, I'm feeling very manly today.
So is that Canadian humor, or does he really want Julian Assange executed in a drone attack?
Yeah, I think he got himself in a lot of hot water over that comment made on the CBC as well just the other day. And Tom Flanagan, who, you know, very senior former advisor to the Prime Minister, you know, a very influential conservative, you know, backroom politician, he did apologize to for making that assassination comment, saying he shouldn't have gone that far. But I do think it shows that, you know, that a lot of people are unhappy, not only, you know, in the United States about the fact that this stuff is out there, that here in Canada too, you know, just how were this information, all these cables were allowed to be leaked.
Well, we think he's much more popular than that, Julian Assange, in Spain. And we're going to find out about that next. Derek Stoffel, national reporter with the CBC. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
You're welcome.
And now we go live to Spain to Scott Horton, an attorney specializing in international law and a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine and a blogger for Harper's.org. Hi, Scott. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Good. Why is WikiLeaks causing such a stir in Spain?
Well, I think it's the one country in the world where they've captured the headlines now for 4 days running, and it's mostly disclosures about the workings of the internal Spanish criminal justice system. There were a series of cases, three of them, that the Americans had a lot of interest in. One of them was the case of the so-called Bush Six, that is, six Bush administration lawyers who were linked to torture, who were under investigation based on a complaint that was filed by an NGO that had to do with the torture, alleged torture, of a Spanish subject who was held at Guantanamo. And these cables show that the embassy was launching all sorts of resources to try and affect these cases. And in the end, and I think this is what's really stirred up the controversy, it shows that the government of Prime Minister Zapatero, that was very anxious to restore and improve ties with the United States, was fully cooperating. So they were doing things like trying to figure out what's the best judge in this national court to have these matters come before, trying to maneuver the cases out of the courts of bad judges and into the courts of good judges. And it seems there were a whole series of direct one-on-one meetings with senior prosecutors and diplomats at which they talked about strategy and how to handle this. So we've got a lot of people in Spain right now saying they've really compromised the independence and integrity of our judicial system. They've done things that diplomats shouldn't be doing.
So the Spanish people are outraged at the United States, but grateful to Julian Assange for making this public?
I don't think I would quite say that. In fact, I wouldn't even say they're outraged at the United States. I think they understand that the U.S. is doing what it's doing. The outrage has really been focused on the Spanish Attorney General, Conde Pompido, and his staff. They don't understand why Spanish prosecutors are effectively colluding with the American embassy on this. They recognize the American embassy had an interest in following these cases and stating its views, but they don't understand how the U.S. government was being allowed to manipulate the appointment of judges and the conduct of prosecutors. They think that's inappropriate.
And the cable show U.S. involvement in the investigation into the 2003 death of a Spanish cameraman and an investigation into the torture of Spanish subjects held at Guantanamo Bay. You wrote that the cables show the U.S. diplomats overstepped their boundaries when getting so involved in all of this. So what's next for the U.S. Embassy in Madrid? Are U.S.-Spanish relations hampered by this?
Well, our ambassador says no, and I think he's probably right. I mean, I think this is a storm that's going to blow over. What's the long-term consequence? There's a lot of question about whether the Spanish Attorney General, Conde Pompido, is going to survive this. But more importantly, the Spanish government, the Zapatero government, has a big initiative to reform the criminal justice process to give more power to prosecutors. And what we see now are a lot of commentators in Spain saying, showing how easily these prosecutors were politically manipulated, why should we change the system to give them more power?
By the way, before we go on to talk about how Julian Assange hopes to hurt the United States, that is specifically how he hopes to hurt the United States with these WikiLeaks, this just in, President Obama has slipped unannounced into Afghanistan. It's a surprise visit under intense security, of course, apparently meant to show personal resolve toward fighting the war and ending the war that was launched in the weeks after September 11, 2001. Any thoughts on the president slipping into Afghanistan today?
Well, it's an awkward time, of course, because of the disclosures that came out about Afghanistan. You had a little bit of that in your discussion from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of cables showing very, very harsh criticism of the Afghan government, including Hamid Karzai, his vice president, and a number of named senior figures described as corrupt, weak, ineffective. And I've got to think that probably the principal objective that Obama has is to meet the troops and the commanders out there. But I think he's got a bit of relationship patching to do.
Scott Horton, blogging on harpers.org. Thanks a lot for joining us to talk about WikiLeaks and Spain.
Great to be with you.
And in just a minute, we'll play excerpts from a Time magazine interview with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange via Skype from an undisclosed location. Oh, in fact, I guess we're going to do that now, right? We're going to go right to that segment right now, and we're going to ask, what does Mr. Assange want? This whole geopolitical undoing to digest the 250,000 State Department cables and calling WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange every name under the sun, including terrorist and worthy of a drone attack. Well, coincidentally or not, he's being sought in Europe on sexual assault charges. By the way, the Daily News Twitter feed says he's been spotted in New York. Who knows if that's true, though? But if you see Julian Assange, please let us know. In the midst of all this, Time magazine got an exclusive interview with Assange via Skype this week, in which he was quite candid about how he wants to hurt the United States and why, and also about some other views that make him seem a little like a Tea Party states' rights kind of guy in a certain way, and a little disillusioned with the wiki part of his organization's name. Massimo Calabresi, Time magazine correspondent, joins us now. Hi, Massimo. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And let's play what I think is, at least to my ear, the central clip from the interview about how Assange sees the United States and how he hopes WikiLeaks will harm it. This runs about a minute, and listeners, you'll have to bear with the Skype sound quality, but I think you'll be able to make it out.
Since 2006, we have been working along this philosophy that organizations which are abusive and need to be scared of the public eye, if their behavior is revealed to the public, they have one of two choices. One is to reform in such a way that they can be proud of their endeavors and proud to display them to the public. Or the other is to lock down internally and to balkanize internally. And as a result, of course, cease to be as efficient as they were. And to me, that is a very good outcome because organizations can either be efficient, open, and honest, or they can be closed, conspiratorial, and inefficient.
Julian Assange. So, Massimo, it sounds, to sum that up, like he believes the U.S. is an abusive regime in foreign policy and that these leaks will make the U.S. less efficient. He uses that word.
It's very interesting to listen to him. He obviously, this is one man, a hacker, a fugitive from justice who is taking on the United States of America. It's impossibly grandiose, but the fact is, when you look at the effect that he's having, there's some justification for his self-confidence. I agree with Scott that this is not necessarily enormously damaging to the U.S., but it is quite clear that what he is trying to do is change the behavior of the U.S. government with regard to how it handles secrets and how many secrets it handles. He has this rather naive and in some ways dangerous idea that it's not just a matter of limiting the number of secrets, but actually almost doing away with all secrets in government, and not just all secrets, but even just confidentiality, the ability of a government official to have a private confidential conversation with aides, with advisors, with people who work for them. That's really a very radical idea. And what's most perplexing about what he's trying to do is that, in fact, it's working at cross purposes with what he says his goals are. By releasing all of these documents, he's actually made what is a concerted and dedicated effort by the Obama administration to limit the number of secrets, to diminish the amount of government secrecy harder. He's undermined an effort that Obama has championed since he came into office to limit government secrecy. So we have this figure who is now a worldwide figure, impossibly grandiose, with enormous aims, but in fact what he's doing is naive and dangerously undermines the very thing that he says he's trying to accomplish.
But does it? I mean, if he, you know, he said to you that he's not for openness per se, he's for justice. So if that's his main goal and he sees justice carried out by hampering the United States, no matter what we think of this, hampering its efficiency in foreign policy. Maybe he is hampering their efficiency in foreign policy because he is making it harder for diplomats to have confidential communications. People are going to be less open now in these back channels. And so one could argue that he is succeeding, we don't know how thoroughly or for how long, in making the U.S. foreign policy apparatus less efficient. Do you think or not think?
Well, you know, I think in practice, as a sort of subculture anti-government activist, I think he is in practice trying to fight the U.S. Bluntly and oppose U.S. Foreign policy execution bluntly, but his larger goal clearly focuses on secrecy, and he clearly wants to make that his sort of primary effect. I don't think he conceives of himself necessarily, even though he's having the effect, as a sort of anti-American agent, an agent to roll back America's foreign policy goals per se. I think he believes that America is a force against openness, and it's that is his target.
Here's another clip that I found revealing from this interview, and I'm not going to play the audio because I think the Skype is actually too hard to hear, but I'll read from the transcript. Assange seems to hold states' rights, American federalism, as he puts it, that gives the states a lot of power as a positive value. And, you know, this is one of the values at the heart of the Tea Party movement. They love the 10th Amendment to the Constitution. So in this clip, he says, quote, "The United States has some immutable traditions, which, to be fair, are based on the French Revolution and the European Enlightenment. The United States founding fathers took those further, and the federalism of the United States, also of relatively powerful states, trying to constrain the federal government from becoming too centralized. also added some important democratic controls and understanding. So there's a lot of good, he says, that has historically come from the United States. But after World War II, during World War II, the federal government started sucking the resources to the center, and the power of the state started to diminish. Interestingly, the First Amendment started overriding states' laws around that time, which he says I see as a function of increasing central power in the United States. Did you ever imagine that in his interview with Time magazine, he would expound on the value of states' rights over a strong federal government?
Yeah, he is a fascinating, fascinating character. I mean, here's someone who went to 30 different schools before he was the age of 14, as his parents led a sort of a nomadic life around Australia. He dropped out of University of Melbourne, apparently in protest over collaboration between scientists there and the U.S. military. But he has this kind of autodidactic erudition. He has read a lot, obviously, and is very well-spoken. And he's not just sort of blowing pretentious smoke. He knows what he's talking about. Does he actually believe that things would be better if the states had more power vis-a-vis the federal government in the United States? I think he's showing off a bit here, frankly, and I think that really, it's a convenient way for him to almost, with an eye to comedy, poke fun at the centralized power in Washington. But I do think that he does have a problem, to the extent that he wants to be taken seriously, with this argument about secrecy, because the fact is Obama, the first thing he did January 21st, 2009, was order the agencies to embrace openness. And he thereafter has ordered a complete review of classification in the U.S. government, and gone further than that, ordered agencies that have dragged their feet on that issue in the past to produce regulations to implement it by the end of the year. And if anything, what Assange has done has given people, for example, at the Defense Department, ammunition against those reforms. So it's one starts to think that he's doing this as much for show as for effect.
Now, this is kind of an aside as compared to the huge questions of war and peace and democracy that we're talking about with respect to Julian Assange. But another thing that I found fascinating in his interview with you was on the very wiki nature of WikiLeaks. And the site is called WikiLeaks because, like Wikipedia, he felt that he was releasing all these raw materials on the war in Afghanistan and a previous dump from the State Department in this one, and that the crowd, the general public using the web, would start to sort through these and organize them and publish what was important about them. And he kind of lost faith in the crowd. He said, well, really, ultimately, people aren't up to this task if they're not experts. And so now he's really working with old-line news organizations. He released these to, you know, five major newspapers. Right. The New York Times is the only one in the United States, and The Guardian in the UK, and three others in other countries. So from a social media standpoint, it's very interesting that the founder of WikiLeaks has lost a little faith in the wiki.
Well, it's a heartwarming endorsement of old media. I find it very reassuring. But it is true that one aspect of the Julian Assange phenomenon, in addition to his ability as a hacker, which is indisputed, and his clever understanding of the problem of expanded secrecy in government, and that really is a problem, he also turns out to be quite a showman. When he realized, after a couple of years of WikiLeaks, that people were not paying attention to the things that were being deposited on his website, he stepped up and sort of crafted this public persona, a man on the run, and started cutting these deals with old media, and that has been obviously enormously successful in projecting WikiLeaks and Assange onto the international stage.
But then, last thing, what do you think the events of this week have done to Assange and his mission? Is he getting weakened by more blowback? The tone that you've been taking, we've heard all week from people who are newsmakers, you know, many of them on the liberal part of foreign policy commentary, progressives, Ezra Klein, Bob Baer, all these people saying, you know, this guy is not a whistleblower. He's not a true leaker. He's just a scattershot danger. Amazon stopped renting him server space. WikiLeaks.org got hacked out of existence. Basically, it's at a new address now. France is considering a ban on WikiLeaks on French servers. He says he's got a big dump coming on a major U.S. bank. Is WikiLeaks' mission really hampered by the way this has gone?
I just think that it's an interesting moment in the public discussion over the effects of the information technology revolution. We have had in the last 15 to 20 years this enormous new phenomenon of ease and rapidity of information storage and retrieval and communication worldwide. And one of the consequences of that is the possibility of massive amounts of secret information being made public at once, whereas in the past it would have been one cable or one document here and there. And I think what the heart of this debate is, although it's not always made clear in the way it's played out over the last days, is to what extent does the public want the government to be able to operate with a certain amount of confidentiality and secrecy, but more, to what extent do they then want, accepting that there should be some confidentiality and secrecy in government, do they want the media to function not just as a fire hose, letting any information they come into contact with out, but as a responsible judge of what news is and what is appropriate and safe with the national interest in mind to publish. And that's obviously, it's a complicated and difficult debate. It's one that the old media has had in a number of different places over the years, certainly more and more so since the Pentagon Papers. But I think that what WikiLeaks has done is sort of updated that discussion for the era of the information technology revolution.
Striking a blow for old media, Massimo Calabresi, Time Magazine, Washington correspondent. You can see their 36-minute, via Skype from an undisclosed location, interview with Julian Assange on Time Magazine's website. He wasn't in New York when you did it, was he?
No, we actually have no idea where he was.
Thank you for joining us.
Yep, my
Brian
pleasure.
Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the Albany Press Corps struggle with David Patterson's scandal reporting. And then a call in for Hanukkah gift givers. What's your strategy on a holiday that calls for 8 nights of presents? Is it 7 dreidels and an Xbox or what? Stay with us.